See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
It was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us, as always, is Catherine Horan.
Hello.
And Mark Biscotti.
I'm greasy.
The super fan.
He's the super extra fan.
I am greasy. I got tapioca all over me, man.
Well, this week we have something very special. So, and Catherine set it all up. We have a special guest, and we are so excited about this. Catherine set it all up. So, Catherine, tell us who our guest is and how you got this going. I assume you know him, and that's how this all happened.
I met him at Monsterpalooza. Happened to pass by his booth. My husband Robert, who actually noticed him and said, "Oh, look over there, you gotta go talk to it's the Greasy Strangler guy." And so went over and talked to him, met him and his friend Larry. Then I was just, days and or I guess a few weeks later, it was like, "Oh, I should try and see if we can get him on the podcast," since Greasy Strangler was the movie you just talked about, and it was such a topic of conversation between us and the listeners. And so I reached out to Larry, and he connected me with Sky. And here he is today, Sky Elabar from the Greasy Strangler.
Yes.
Hello.
So happy.
Yeah.
Yay.
Wow. What an intro, man.
You may want to let him know the format of the show.
What's that? What do you mean, Joe?
I don't know if they told you, but we are just audio only. There's no video to this.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
There could be audio or video to it. I mean, this could go on YouTube if we want. Who knows?
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have just to know. We'd have to start over if we did that, but because I don't have it recorded.
No, this is only for the listeners.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, Sky, it's so great to have you. We had, as Catherine mentioned, we had just watched Greasy Strangler, at the beginning of summer, in June. And yeah. I had not heard of it. I had not seen it. But Mark, we take turns. Each of us does a theme where we pick movies, and Mark opened his up to the listeners. And there was one of our listeners,
Alona Wild,
who she said that this is a movie that she brings people over to her house. They have a party and they watch, and she introduces this movie, The Greasy Strangler, to strangers. And, we watched it, and Mark and I for sure loved this movie. I was smiling from beginning to end. Yeah. I have so many questions about it. I think we all have so many questions about it, because it is the style of these movies. I believe the director's Jim Hosking. Is that right?
Yes.
Am I saying that right? The style is so unique. It's such an interesting, there's nothing else like it. It's surreal.
It's like nothing I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
Literally.
And sometimes especially with the Greasy Strangler and Ebony and Ivory, I'm thinking to myself when I'm watching them, this is a miracle that these exist, that these movies are being made. Like this is somebody's vision that is so specific and so unique. And my first question to you is, do you know Hosking, and were you friends, and how do you fit into his style of doing things, and how
the
did
Hosking
you
verse
right? Yes. Yeah. How does because it's so specific, was it just tailor-made for you, or are you friends with him? I don't know.
I worked with him on two short films that hit festivals in 2000 2010 and 2012. And the first one was Renegades. And you can see it out on Vimeo. It's really, really bizarre. And I kind of was attracted to his style, as you say, his scripts and stuff. And we started working together. The second one was called Crabs. And it's shot in the Los Angeles forest. And it's a really bizarre story. Again, he just kept going with these stories. And then he sent me The Greasy Strangler, the script. And that's when we started talking about like doing it, putting the cast together. And I got a bunch of my friends in there. I brought Gil in, and I brought Carl in, and I brought Mel in, the hot dog vendor.
Oh, God, such a great scene. I love that scene. Do you have anything to do with the writing at all, or do you?
No, nothing
to do. Yeah.
That didn't come out of my brain.
I did have a question for you about the dialogue in both Greasy Strangler and Ebony and Ivory. It kind of has its own rhythm and its own. Is it harder to memorize dialogue like that? Because in a way, it's kind of like poetry in how it has a certain rhythm to it.
Like music.
I think if you like something a lot, you don't have a hard time like memorizing it and learning it. If you don't like it, it's harder to put those things in your brain and like lodge them in. Do you ever have that experience where you kind of have to do something that you don't like and you just, but if you like it,
it's
it
easy.
Comes, yeah, it's easier.
I
remember when I acted like in plays and whatnot, it was like with Shakespeare. I was like, I loved like the whole storyline, but like memorizing the lines where it was like, you know, memorizing a poem. And I just enjoyed just reading the lines and just memorizing it, you know.
This is like Shakespeare for mentally challenged people.
Correct.
So is it safe to say when you got the script for Ebony and Ivory, on first read, do you just automatically get it? Or is it taking a while to get that type of comedic humor?
I kind of got it. Yeah, I kind of got it, and we went with it. But the script changed. I memorized the whole script, the first draft, and then there was a second draft and a third draft and a fourth draft and a fifth draft. And I memorized all those.
Wow.
And he changed a lot of stuff and made like that big speech where I sing to Gil, to Stevie.
Yeah.
That changed a bunch of times. That whole the rhythm of that and the what he was saying. And that was a little difficult because it's very, very odd. Those groupings of food, those food groups.
Was there anything in the original, I guess, four drafts that got cut that you were like really disappointed?
There were little things that got cut where I was say, this is the doobie woobie. And I wrote this yesterday. And he cut that. I was going to make a little
for the rights for that. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
He cut a lot of that stuff.
Because there's no like specific mentions of Beatles, anything other than just sort of, you know, ambiguous that you're the cute one, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were two camps in the Ebony and Ivory production. There was the camp that said, look, don't push it. We don't want to get sued. And then there was Tim League who was like, let's get sued, push it. And I was in that camp. I was like, let's get sued, man, because it'll bring up it'll bring this film up into the public. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no such thing as bad press.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. No press is bad press.
So like I had a question about that with the Paul McCartney. So like in Ebony and Ivory, your character is a wildly, you know, fictitious, ridiculous version of Paul McCartney. Did you do any actual research into his real life mannerisms and accents, or did Jim Hoskins just say, just go with it? Because I thought you're betraying.
I had mannerisms and stuff that I wanted to do. And I wanted to do some of the Paul stuff. And Jim didn't want any of that.
He didn't.
So he was going to throw out the window, like throw that, all those mannerisms out the window. Really?
But he let you keep the head shake thing with the mouth and all that.
Yeah. Which we kind of did.
Because your portrayal of this icon, like musician, must have been so, like when you were reading the script for Ebony and Ivory, and we'll get into the Greasy Strangler, but your portrayal, like when you're reading the script at the very beginning and you're reading it and it's like you're standing on the beach and Stevie Wonder's like rowing in and whatnot. And it's like, was that just daunting? It's like, what am I getting into? Like, what is happening here? It's like, am I going to be able to
When I read that, I'm like, how are you going to do this? How are you going to get Gil out on a boat? And then I got a call from one of the producers, Ann Timpson, that said, can you get Gil some rowing lessons? And I'm like, are you serious? And he's like, yeah, we're going to put him in a boat in the ocean. And I'm like, oh my God. I called Gil and I'm like, dude, you got to get some rowing lessons. So he went to some lady who was showing him how to row a boat.
My God, that's hilarious.
Where did you guys shoot that? Was that here?
We shot at Cornwall.
Oh, okay. So you guys went to England. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it looked like England. Yeah, for sure.
I will admit, that entire scene, once he gets off the boat and he's struggling with his luggage, I was yelling at the screen at you, Sky, and like, would you just help him with his bags? Yeah, the guy's blind.
Well, we had a whole conversation about that. I was like, man, hey, Jim, Paul's a real asshole for not letting Steve, like helping him. He's like, yeah, let's have Paul be an asshole.
Well, not to mention the fact that Stevie Wonder is blind and he's just carrying all these bags. He's got this stick. He's not using the stick.
Right.
He's
absolutely absurd.
As they're walking from the beach to the house, Stevie Wonder is in front. He is leading.
Yes, he's leading the way.
To the house that he has not been to. The Scottish
he has no
Scottish
idea where he's going.
I didn't think it was going to go down that way.
That's so funny. It's hilarious,
Scottish,
it's so funny.
Scottish cottage.
Jim is like, if you say, hey, I want to help Stevie, he'll go the opposite. No, don't help Stevie.
Oh, yeah.
So the Scottish cottage bit, is that like something written in the script or something you guys improv with on? You know?
No, that was in the script. But Jim said to Gil, say it this way.
Okay.
And Gil started saying it that way, and it was really hilarious how he was saying it. So they used that thing as a little comedic, you know, moment.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
Scottish cottage. Yeah.
So is the humor of these movies in your wheelhouse, or like, you know, I mean, it's hard to judge a movie that you're in, but in terms, is this kind of humor your humor, and are these kinds of movies yours?
The thing with this movie is Jim and I talked about it before we lay, like in the process of developing this thing and doing it. My opinion was I wanted to play this straight, like really heartfelt and sincere. And he wanted to do something different, but I tried to kept bringing it back to something like make this guy real, a little bit real, not comical.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But Stevie turned out to be more comical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But what you did was succeed with that because you did bring it in, and with your acting and your eyes, you act with your eyes, which I like continuously. Great. Just watch continuously. I'm always watching your eyes. And just like at the beginning of the beach scene when you're rubbing his feet. It's I'm telling you, you act with your eyes, and it's just masterful. It's absolutely masterful, Sky.
I did ask for Stevie's feet to be clean before I.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely have to.
Let's put it. Let's put it this way, since we're not on camera.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Goodness.
Well, I mean like with Ebony and Ivory, I mean you two must have really gotten close, because I mean some of the scenes in there are absolutely just very intimate, very intimate. And
Yeah. And you saw the poster too, right?
Yes. Perfect.
But you guys were friends before, right? Before movies and everything.
Yeah. Gil and I have been friends for, God, 15 or 16 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
We worked together way back, and I was always telling him, I'm going to get you into the Greasy Strangler, man. And Jim came up to me one day and said, hey, we need to cast a couple roles. And I looked at, I was like, what roles? And he's like, the car wash guy. I said, Gil is the car wash guy.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And he's like, who's Gil? Send me a picture. So I sent him a picture. He said, bring him down for a little read. And he got the role.
That's great. The car wash. And then
Mel. That was that easy to get the role? Oh my God.
Yeah.
He was perfect for that thing.
I know.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, 100%. Yeah, it was made for him. And those car wash scenes were so hilarious with him getting washed and screaming every time he would kill somebody, and then he'd be back in there. I would die laughing every time.
That was genius there.
Yeah.
Well, we'll probably move on to the Greasy Strangler right now. But since Ebony and Ivory and the Greasy Strangler both features incredibly blatant use of prosthetic penises, is navigating prosthetic nudity just another standard day at the office at this point?
No, not really. with Jim Hosking, it is.
Yeah.
He's it's just something that comes into play when you work with him.
Yeah.
Do you know how difficult it is for him to get these financed? The prosthetic thing is, but the movie's financed, and because they're so, I mean, on the page they have to be very strange. How much difficulty does he have being able to get them made?
Well, the Greasy Strangler was the Ant Timpson got the script. The guy from Timpson Films, New Zealand, he got the script from Jim, and Elijah Wood and Ant are good friends. Ant sent the script to Elijah Wood, and that's what made the Greasy Strangler happen. Spectrevision funded that. But Ebony and Ivory was a whole different thing. I had to raise money for that.
Oh, did you?
My gosh.
Yeah. I went to a friend in Germany who put quite a bit of money into it and made the film happen, really. So that was a harder one because it's really strange. I mean, the Greasy Strangler's got a lot more stuff going on. And if you read the script, you're like, this is insane. But you read the script for Ebony and Ivory, it's two guys in a Scottish cottage massaging each other.
Yeah. And
it's harder, to get funding.
Yeah.
What's that?
And making hot cocoa and, our hot chalkies and all that. Yeah.
Hang on. I got to show you this, even though it's not.
Oh, yes. What nice. A treat.
That was the best looking hot chocolate I've ever seen.
That's the hot chalky cup.
Yeah, that's the owl cup from Ebony and Ivory when he made the hot chalkies. His reaction to drinking the hot chalkies, I think it might have been when you said you didn't buy store bought chocolate sprinkles, and he just started growling for like 3 minutes. I was laughing hysterically for that whole scene.
He's a grumpy boy, isn't he?
I went into a seizure. I went into a seizure because I was the first one out of the group to watch Ebony and Ivory to do research interviewing you. And I was just I texted our CineScare chat group, and I'm like, oh my god, guys, Matt, you have no idea like what you're in for. Cause yeah. And it was just, and that was one of my laughing seizures. I had 2 to 3 laughing seizures in Greasy Strangler, where I was rolled up in a ball and I couldn't even, I was crying. Ebony and Ivory,
yeah.
The hot cocoa scene, I was in a ball. I was done. I was absolutely done. That and the sheep.
It was, oh my god, the sheep.
Yes, the sheep, especially the first sheep that they see. Oh god, it's so funny.
The guy made those sheep, and we got inside those fake sheep.
Yeah, those are elaborate costumes.
Yeah, they were. So the sheep scene's a great example of this, but also the disco cutie. You know, there are a lot of chants like that between actors or between you generally and someone else in both of these movies. How long do you do that for before he calls cut and feels like he's got enough banter back and forth in those?
Yeah, that went on way too long.
Yeah.
That when we're in the field, we were out there for hours doing that. And it was hours. I was there for at least 8 hours.
Wow.
In that sheep, inside that sheep.
At least you were warm.
You seem like you were in a trance at one point. Like you're just yeah. Eyeing and bang. Like you two. I mean, obviously it was a fever dream that Gil was doing, you know. But I mean, what a fever dream that was, and how it kept on going and going. I was just like, how long is this gonna go? How long?
That wasn't an hour in the sheep. That was all day in those sheep.
Wow.
And that was, oh my god, that was miserable.
And you were you're doing the ba sounds the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. I can't believe you had a voice at the end of that day.
Well, that's one of my gifts. I can scream and not lose my voice.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
Literally can go off and do that for hours. But we did Ebony Ivory. We did that for hours.
Oh my god.
It's hilarious. It's so
funny. How long
did
it take to shoot Ebony and Ivory?
It was 2 weeks.
Well.
It was 2 weeks. And we went there earlier and did like stunt stuff with the stunt coordinator and rehearsed, because we had to talk about being in the ocean, because the ocean was 45 degrees and it was like death. Gil almost died.
Oh god.
They kind of had these rowing lessons. I'm assuming the Greasy Strangler was considerably longer film shoot.
It was 3 more days.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow.
With like 3 times the cast.
You have to be prepared. Like when you go on set, there's no time to like, oh wait, I got to look at the script. Forget it. You have to know that fucking script.
Yeah. So does he work pretty fast then?
He works real fast.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But the fever dream stuff he wants to get so he can go back and forth and pick the right one. Mm-hmm. So that was one day right there, one full day in the field.
Wow.
So before you were like making these wonderfully like bizarre movies, like how did you actually step into the world of acting? Like,
you come from a music background. Yeah.
Yeah. I came out to LA. I was in a band. I had a band and we kind of like fizzled right after we got off Atlantic Records. We thought we were going to like, you know, pick up another label. And then the industry just changed then. It was back in like 2005, 2004.
What was the band? What was the name of the band?
It was called Seventh House, spelled out Seventh House. And our Atlantic release was 7th House, which I didn't like. They talked us into that. And we, is you this know,
the right
we
one
had
with songs like "Dirty Laundry" and "Gypsy Queen" and "Muddy Water" and "In a Jar."
Yeah, that's the one with the mouth on the front. So that's the Atlantic release.
Okay,
that's the one that was done. We recorded that in Falls Church, Virginia, at Q Studios in 2000.
Ah.
And then went out and toured and did gigs, played with all these bands. But we had we were back in the 90s too, when we were like in Pittsburgh and we opened for Dave Matthews' band. We opened for Bob Seger.
That's
we
crazy.
Opened for
what the fuck?
Yeah. We
That's
opened
so
for
cool.
a lot of people.
Wow. You Fishbone. Said earlier, mm-hmm. You opened for Fishbone. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And one more.
And then we opened for STP, Deftones, Green Day. And then after our first record, the Atlantic people, they merged. Time Warner merged with AOL. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
Yeah. And they split up all the little subsidiary labels. They dropped all of them. So we got dropped immediately.
Wow.
And then the saga began, you know.
So where did the acting start for you after your music career?
We came out to L.A. My wife and I drove out in our van in the trailer, and we picked up and did some shows at the Troubadour, the House of Blues, the Key Club, and it just kind of like to do a band. Then you had to, couldn't be in L.A. You had to be out on the road, and it's the last thing I wanted to do. So. My wife started getting into acting, and I said, maybe I'll do that. She said, come on. And she got me down to this place called LA Casting where I did a photograph and you'd submit yourself to these projects. And in like a week, I got my first movie.
In a week?
And then, I got an audition, and the director from Denmark liked me and put me in this movie.
That's nice. So cool.
That's awesome.
What film was that?
It was called Nothing But the Truth. It was a skateboarder film where Nike put skateboarders that they were endorsed, these skateboarders that were endorsed in with actors to do scenes and to do a movie. It's a really bizarre thing.
Oh wow.
And they had a big premiere and everything, and I met all these famous skateboarders, Reese Forbes, if you know any skateboarder type thing, all the famous guys, I met them.
Tony Hawkins? Oh,
no, he wasn't endorsed by Nike.
Oh,
Paul Rudd,
okay.
P-Rod was endorsed, okay. Paul Rodriguez Jr. And Omar Salazar, and this little kid that was 14 with red hair. He was endorsed. He was like a zillionaire. He was a millionaire, and he was 14 doing all these tricks.
Wow.
So that got me into it. And then I got an agent and started doing more work, man. I did a thing on My Name is Earl with Jason Lee. And did New Girl. I did some TV shows. I worked with Nick Kroll on his show. The Nick Kroll Show. Have you ever watched that?
Yeah, I have.
You can check it out. There's a couple episodes called Ponsylvania. It's a sketch thing about a pawn shop in Pennsylvania that are vehemently against each other. One in Philadelphia and one in Pittsburgh. And I was. Nick Kroll is genius, man.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So that's what got me into it. And then the casting director who had been calling me in for commercials called me in to see for this short film. And I met Jim. And he's a bizarre dude. He's like 6 foot, like 7 feet tall, and like, he lurks in the corner throwing out.
That's so cool. Another movie you did that I watched this past week was Candy Corn. And that has some really cool horror legends in it, like Tony Todd and PJ Souls. And
I became friends with them.
How was that? How was that experience?
That was fun. My friend Poncho, the little guy mm-hmm. who played the Dr. Death.
Was he a skateboarder in the Danish movie?
No, he wasn't. He was out of it by then. He had got injured early on, but he's a pro skateboarder at one time. But anyway, Poncho got me into candy corn. He talked to the director and said, "Hey, you got to get Sky over here for Gus, the role of Gus." And that was fun, man. I went out to where was it? Cincinnati or somewhere? We shot it in a small town right in Ohio, and
that's
was
neat.
Bizarre. Thanks for watching.
Yeah,
that was a fun one. Out. I like that.
Yeah.
One.
And then the rest is history.
Right.
The Greasy Strangler.
Yeah.
No. You're skipping over Sexy Furby, which is one of my personal favorites.
There's something else, man.
That's fucking bizarre. That's a very Twilight Zone type. You know that episode of the Twilight Zone where that woman thinks she's all ugly and she wakes up and it turns out all the doctors are aliens? That's basically the plot, right?
It's for bizarre.
Yeah.
I love it. That that makes Jim Hosking stuff look like Mary Poppins.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad
let's not forget about that.
Do you know, is Jim Hosking, is he working on anything else? Does he talk to you about anything he's working on, or
we were trying to get one of his bigger films, this thing called Fluff. We shouldn't talk about it because he doesn't want anyone to know about it.
Oh, maybe not.
Sorry, nobody listens
trying to get
to this
something.
Show.
Yeah, nobody listens.
I can
to the
edit.
Show.
I'll edit that.
At least not in this country.
It'll be fine.
We're big in Vietnam, but not in the States. So
we're huge in Vietnam.
Huge.
We don't know why.
But that's what he's trying to get going next. It's a real fantasy, a bigger budget, like $10 or $20 million budget fantasy kind of thing.
And does he have something for you in it, or?
Of course. Nice. Guy's like the Robert De Niro of Martin Scorsese. You're kidding me?
That's right, dude. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're absolutely welcome. That's what you want.
But I have my new film that's coming out.
That I
produced.
Oh, tell us about it. Yeah,
what? Yeah.
It's called, and I'll send you guys when I get off. I'll send you guys the trailer, which we don't want to put out yet. It's a teaser trailer that's going to the festivals.
Okay.
It's called a Ben Evans film. It's the story is by Josh Malerman, who did Bird Box.
Oh wow!
And we shot this in Detroit, and it's basically about an aspiring filmmaker. Who goes into a delusion to make he's in a delusional down spiral to make his mother a star.
God.
So he's trying to make a film to make his mother a star, and he meets up with a guy who's his mentor, who's a film guy who writes a book, and he tries to like do everything by the book.
Can you it's on IMDb, divulge who the janitor is?
Yeah, that's Deadmau5.
Yeah.
That's my friend Deadmau5.
Very odd.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Do you want to explain Deadmau5?
Well, right before we did the movie, he was called me from Argentina. And was talking about, I'm going to watch Ebony and Ivory. And I'm like, hey, do you want to be in my new film? And he's like, what is it? And I told him, he said, when? And I said, we're doing it in Detroit on this day. And he said, I'm there.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
Came down from Toronto to do this one day, the janitor scene. And he had a couple little points. He said, I've got to wear my off-colored Converse shoes. He has a black one and a red one, or a white one and a red one, whatever he wears. That was his only demand.
Mark, he's a Deadmau5 is a big, he's a Canadian, like EDM, electronic dance music. He's a DJ and a music producer. Early on, he was kind of famous for when he was DJing. He had this giant, it was just like a circle for a sphere for his head with two big ears on it.
I've seen that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
And you see t-shirts all the time with that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. With dead mouse used to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, and he's a great dude.
I'm 54. And
he's a dude that is a massive Greasy Strangler fan. He had custom made the heads of the Greasy Strangler and the head of Braden as the Greasy Strangler. He's got the full size heads.
Wow.
So if we're gonna deep dive into Greasy Strangler, I would be completely remiss if we didn't ask a favor, since Alana Wild. She was the one that sort of started all this. If you wouldn't mind saying hi to Alana, we'd probably greatly appreciate it.
Hey Alana, this is Big Braden from the Greasy Strangler.
Oh my god, hell yeah.
She'll be very happy.
Glad to be on the podcast.
You sent us down this road, by the way, Alana. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Alana
started all this.
So really,
this is all her fault.
Yeah.
She did. Yeah. She's a listener of CineScare, and I put out it was a listener's choice. And I picked three listeners, their choices, and Alana came out of the blue. And it was kind of like she came out before even. She was the reason why I picked this topic, because she brought this up, and I was like, Greasy Strangler. It's like, hey, you know, why not have the listeners pick the topics instead of us? And so she was the reason why I picked the topic. And then lo and behold, it's the best film I've seen all year. It's amazing. I love it. Matt loves it too. And Catherine and Joe.
We don't quite understand.
Yeah.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah. I have to watch it.
Can I be honest?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we did it in 2015. It got added. We did it in May of 2015. Then it got edited, and I thought, this thing is never. Nobody's ever going to watch this, and nobody's ever going to even like this movie. But I really, I did the best I could. I did like I gave my whole to this movie, and that's it. I'm moving on. And then in December, I got a call. We're in Sundance. And I'm like, wow. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, you know, the thing is, you commit to it in a very, you take it, you don't play it as a joke. You play the characters completely earnestly. Yeah. And that's the only way it works is, you know, if you were telegraphing that it was all a joke or whatever, or
yeah, that,
you know,
wouldn't
making
work.
Any
that
kind of comment.
Terrible.
Yeah, it wouldn't work, but it's, yeah. You were so committed to it, and it's this, it's its own world and its own, I don't even know how to do it, but its own universe. And it takes a certain kind of fit, and Gil fits perfectly too. Is he a little grouchy in normal life too? Or is that just how he?
No. Gil is not grouchy at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. When we were working on the script together, cause he was having a hard time with the Ebony and Ivory script. And I said, well, let's get together, man. Come on. And I started pushing him. He's like, don't push me, man. Don't push me. Don't push me. And then like he learned the whole first script. And then he got another version, and he let his head exploded. I said, dude, calm down. Calm down, dude. Calm down.
But I will say, both Ebony and Ivory and Greasy Strangler, as bizarre and, you know, out of the left field as they are, they both do have heart. And by the end, you know, with Greasy Strangler, it's this father and son finding this connection. Yeah. And Ebony and Ivory, it's these two strangers coming together.
Love that.
And so I appreciate that. I love that journey that you bring us on.
Well, I'm watching her take a. I'm watching her take a dump right now on the TV from the Greasy Strangler.
Joe's watching the Greasy Strangler. It's on his TV on the side, Sky.
Oh wow.
So how miserable or delightful, I guess, is possible, is a day on the set where you're like in full grease?
That's terrible, man. That's okay. The worst.
Yeah. Like worse than there's the
commit. There's the commitment right there.
Right.
Well, oh no, that's the grease thing is 100 times. Okay. Here's the only thing that's worse than the grease that I would have said here. I'll take the grease. The final the scene that we did on the final day of Ebony and Ivory were in the ocean all day. That was horrible.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think about that.
That was horrible. And they could have, Jim could have had us in like most of the time in like a wetsuit.
Yeah.
He didn't want that. And Gil had blind contacts in.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's out in the ocean with blind contacts. He got swept out and almost drowned. And they had to put him in. But he was like, can I not wear these blind contacts? And Jim's like, no, wear the blind contact.
Oh, wow.
So it's a commitment to get in that ocean. Oh, my God. We had to like stand in the cold showers in the morning, like to get your body ready for that.
Yeah.
That's miserable.
Because have you ever been in 45-degree ocean?
Oh, no.
It's a shock when you get in, and then when you're in there for a minute or two, it's doing something to you where you can't even think practically.
Yeah, you didn't have hypothermia.
Yeah, well, I ran out, and I said I got to get warm. I went back to the thing, and they had a doctor, and my temperature was 91.
Oh,
he said, "Hey, you got to warm up before you go in again." I'm like, "I'm going in again."
Oh my gosh!
But the first time was 3 minutes.
Hold on, Mark. Say it again.
The first time was 3 minutes, and I felt like I was going to die.
Yeah.
I came out, and Jim's like, "You got to act like you're having a wild swim, like you're really happy." And I'm like, "Dude, this is freaking cold." Oh,
God,
it's all for the art. It's all for the art. Like, and when they like when you got all the like the ocean and all that kind of stuff, it's like you can't just take a hot like scalding shower. That'll be a shock to the system. You
can't do that.
You got to do a cold shower, right?
They had these like really thin, like aluminum foil looking blankets.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
these space blankets.
Heat retention.
And put that in and with a heat pad inside, and it warmed you up. And then we were drinking whiskey.
Perfect.
And that got us back to where we went in. We went in 3 times, man.
Oh my God.
3 times. And that was worse than the grease suit.
Yeah.
But that was tapioca, right?
That grease suit was this stuff called methocellulose. It looks like grease. Uh-huh. It's an organic compound. You could actually eat it and you won't get sick. And it comes in buckets. So they poured that over us, right? Poured it over our heads. And then as you did your scene and you were freezing because it was cold out when we did these scenes, it was really cold. We had to get in front of heaters. And that stuff like got hard. And it started not looking shiny. So they put more on, and then they put this ice stuff on that was like made it look like grease, but it made you cold. It was like,
God,
it was crazy, dude. It's crazy.
Ugh. It's all for the film. It's all for the film.
It's for the film, dude.
It's for the film,
but
man.
Hey, I got to send a little shout out to Big Ronnie because he was in the greasy suit a lot, dude.
Yeah,
I think I was in it. I may have been in it 2 days.
Yeah.
Maybe 3 days. I think 2 days I was in it. Yeah, Ronnie was in that fucking thing for 8 days.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Ronnie, Big Ronnie, what was the most challenging part of maintaining a straight face during your intense death and shouting matches? Because the bullshit artist is literally iconic with the Greasy Strangler. Everyone says bullshit artist, bullshit artist, bullshit artist. What did you guys break character at all? Like
no, because he was
that go for.
He was really annoying on set.
He was.
He was super annoying, and there was no laughter at all. And he was forgetting all of his lines and stuff. So it wasn't like laughing at him because he was forgetting his lines. I'm like, how are we gonna fucking do this? Right. And then we just were trying to get it together. And then the whole bullshit artist scene, you know, where we're yelling at each other. That scene didn't make any sense to me at all. So when I looked at that on the page, right, I said, I'm not even going to learn this. I'm not going to learn this scene because this makes no sense. So we get on set and it just happened. Bullshit artist, horseshit artist, horseshit. And then it kind of fell together. But there were no laughing moments.
There was really. No laughing. It's like. So it's basically it didn't end up on screen. It didn't make sense until it was seen on screen because it's an iconic scene. It's you know it's like it's maybe it's just like a Hoskins moment of brilliance that only
he that had. Was a good. You're right, man.
Yeah,
that didn't make any sense. If you would have read the script, you would have said this thing has got to go. This is a waste. And. But no, that was one of the highlights of the whole movie,
sure.
Us throwing insults at each other.
Yeah. Well, the scene that I would read and think made no sense would be from Ebony and Ivory, the Doobie Woobie, where you were trying to get him to say Doobie with Woobie. And it went on. I don't know how long that scene went on, but it was a really long scene that where I'm thinking, is he going to get it or not? You know? So there's a lot of things like that, that I think that if the first time you're reading a script of his, you have to be thinking, I have no idea what I'm doing with this.
Yeah. I don't know how this is going to work ever in any universe. I'll give you a hint. It begins with the you know,
yes, exactly.
You're trying to get him to say, it's like the kind of the Greasy Strangler where, Dad, what is it? And he's like, Dad, tell me what it is.
And it's funny that you mentioned that he had trouble with his lines because I could kind of sense that watching it, that the guy, you almost feel the actor really at the edge of not knowing what his next line is or what he was going to say. It worked. It worked in that case. But now that you mention it, it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I think we would be remiss if we didn't have a big shout out to Christina Blackaller. Is that her last name?
Yeah.
Blackaller?
Yes.
The costume designer, because that is some of the most bizarre costuming I've ever seen in my life. Especially the purple disco suit with the giant crotch cut out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
That scene in it, I don't think we'll ever see a scene like that in another movie. That's like one of a kind with the on the street with the spotlight on and that outfit. Yeah. Come on, man.
No, come on. Could you walk us through the choreography and mindset between that unique dancing and in the club? Like how did that happen? Like who was doing, like who told you?
Jim, the club where there were, there's three guys on under the disco ball.
Correct. The song.
Okay.
Oh my God. What a song, by the way.
That's Jim. Jim kind of directed them how to dance. That wasn't there. I mean, a lot of this is coming out of Jim's mind. It's not like, you know, Big Ronnie or me that like the dance on the sand, which won a dance contest in Rio de Janeiro, by the way. I should mention that. The Rio de Janeiro Film Festival said that's the best dance scene in any movie on Ebony and Ivory.
No, that's
crazy.
That scene. I loved
that. That was Jim.
Yeah. That scene. The Doobie Woobie scene, I was starting to lose a little interest at that point, and then we came right back first with the sheep, which I thought was the funniest thing. I busted
with
out
the what?
Laughing with the sheep.
The sheep.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then I think the next scene after that is first seeing that sheep was the dance on the beach, and I was right back in, and I absolutely loved that scene. So great. And I've seen a lot of reviews of people, especially like on Letterboxd and other places, that saying the last scene of Ebony and Ivory is just this beautiful scene, and I kept seeing that as part of it, and that really, for some reason, that last scene of Ebony and Ivory really connected with people. And I'm not sure if it was the when you guys were with the sheep and doing the Ebony Ivory, or if it was on the beach, or what.
The last scene of the movie where he's going away.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that.
You think what?
Go ahead.
I'm not sure. That was. What was your question about that scene and the other scenes on the beach?
Well, I was saying one of the things I noticed was I saw a lot of reviews of people just commenting, "What a beautiful last scene."
Oh yeah,
of Ebony and Ivory. And I'm assuming it was when he's leaving.
That's the one. Yeah, where Paul and we're sitting on the couch, and then we're on the beach, and he's leaving.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good thing. That's good writing, man.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I thought it was. Yeah. I thought that scene would like the beautiful scene was when they're on the couch. It's like we can make something beautiful together, do a song. I think that's like the
I love
that
it.
Really got me was when you two were just staring. It's like we're going to make a song, we're going to change the world, we're going to change the way people think, and that's the scene that I thought that was absolutely beautiful.
It really resonated. We also have to mention Elizabeth Durazzo from The Greasy Strangler. She was fully committed. And the only thing I'd ever seen her in before Greasy Strangler was Eastbound and Down,
right?
Which is a great show. And she was always – it always came off to me like she was an actress that didn't have a lot of experience, and that was kind of part of the thing with that. And they didn't give her a lot to do in that show until maybe the last season or so, but she came into this and went full on with you guys on it. And I mean, she was asked to do a lot of things that would have been like, what the hell have I gotten myself into? But you don't see everyone in that was fully committed. It was amazing to me. And all
they tried, they wanted to cut the vendor scene. And I was like, are you guys crazy? Yeah. They wanted to cut that scene. They were like, we don't like Mel. And I'm like, dude, that scene is amazing.
It is amazing.
I could lose my license. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great scene. It's one of my favorites of the whole movie.
But fortunately, Jim loved the scene and he had final say with all that stuff. But someone was chiming in saying, yeah, let's cut the hot dog vendor scene. Are you crazy?
You got to be crazy.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
This dog is fully dunked? Come on. You're gonna cut that.
So great. And he has a quality. It reminds me of Wes Anderson used to have a guy that was in Bottle Rocket and the Indian actor. I cannot remember his name, but or Pakistani, he might be Pakistani. He was in Bottle Rocket and he was in the Royal Tenenbaums. I think he was in his early movies. There was the same kind of quality as you got the vendor, right? You got him in the movie. Yeah.
Yes, I did. Yeah. He was a good friend. He passed away right after he fell down in a strip mall up in Glendale. He was having a coffee, fell down. They didn't get to him in time. He had a heart attack and he died. This was right after the film was premiered in New York City. That's devastating. But yeah, Mel was a great guy. He's a stand-up comedian.
Really?
Yeah, he toured the world for years and years and years with Jackie Mason. He opened up for Jackie Mason. Yeah. And then then found that Jackie Mason and he had a big falling out. And I said, Mel, tell me what happened. What happened? No, I'm not going to talk about it. What happened, Mel? I really want to know. He would never tell me what happened. Oh
my God.
I kind of figured it out on my own.
That's too bad.
So Sky, with the Greasy Strangler is wildly famous for polarizing viewers and then wildly famous for viewers that embrace the film. What is the single most memorable or unhinged fan reaction someone has said or done to you?
Like, did somebody run up to you at a convention and say, do you want to be on the CineScare podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. That was the weirdest reaction.
That was the weirdest moment ever.
I don't think there's been any weird moments. Everybody that I come in contact with Instagram loves it. But at one point, somebody came on and said, oh, no, you're not talking about this film again. When are you going to stop talking about this film and actually do something good?
Oh,
and
God.
You get those people every now and then, but I'm like, wow. Oh,
the internet.
It's
sucks.
Always good to get people that are passionate either way, you know?
Yeah.
I don't, if they hate it, you know?
It's fine. But it's
fine, man.
But when you love it and the way we do, God, it's just such a pleasure. It's just like, oh.
Yeah.
When I first saw it at Sundance, I saw it for the first time. I didn't see any screeners. I saw it at the big screening. I was like, holy shit, what the fuck is this?
What was the audience reaction?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was the audience?
It was insane. It was insane. Really? There were so many people there. It was packed. All the screenings were sold out. It was
That's
packed.
Awesome.
Really?
They loved it. Sundance loved it, man.
That's great.
Yeah. That's good.
So I'm hoping to get my new movie. What's that?
Did it win anything? Or
it didn't win anything at Sundance. But it did win a BFI award and an Empire award in England. Couple awards.
Go ahead, man.
I think you were going to ask what I was about to ask.
Your new movie.
I was going to say, I hope my new movie gets in Sundance. It's a high bar, man, to get in Sundance.
Yeah. That would be fantastic. Yeah.
When are you releasing it?
Well, we're going to start submitting it to festivals here. Sundance is going to be the first, and then we'll go.
Feature. It's a feature. Right?
Yeah. I'll send you guys the trailer so you can look at the teaser.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Would love to see it.
And you tell me what you think.
Before we wrap things up, this is obviously a horror podcast. What are your favorite horror movies? I don't know. Pick a couple that spring to mind. Are you
or TV shows?
Either.
Both.
Actually, either.
Both.
Yeah. Both.
My favorite.
It's like picking a favorite child.
I'd have to say, The Shining.
Yeah.
The Shining is kind of my thing. And
wait, let's clarify which version. Are we talking the Stanley Kubrick Shining?
Or
are
we talking why?
There's
the
a TV
miniseries.
There's a TV miniseries version.
No.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
it wasn't
you.
Come on, Sky. It's not that bad.
It's horrid.
No, it was not good.
I'd rather be in 40-degree weather.
Then the next
than watch
one, the next one, Alien. Oh, Ridley Scott's first Alien.
Yes.
Yep.
I really.
Fantastic.
So, and then TV shows. Have you seen the British Penny Dreadful?
Yes.
With Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, and Ava Green.
I love that.
That first two seasons with Ava Green and Timothy Dalton is so good. Joe, you've got to watch Penny Dreadful. It's fantastic.
It's a shame they canceled it because it was so good.
And they let it.
They got through their storylines, and then and then they went to a different storyline that I wasn't as into. I think it was during the Zoot Suit Riots or something like that, but it wasn't as great. But
wait, you're talking about the American thing,
right? The
that was terrible.
There was like another season. It was called Penny Dreadful.
Yeah, that's the American. He came over. Oh,
guys, talking about the other one.
What?
That's terrible. No, I'm talking about the one, the British one with Timothy Dalton and
Eva Green.
Okay, that one. And then then the writer came over and did a City of Angels thing, which was horrible.
It wasn't good. Yeah, it wasn't good. No, the first two seasons were with Eva Green, and that was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah.
And then I love Guillermo del Toro's The Strain.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen that, no.
Those first, I loved all seasons, four or five seasons, but the first two seasons.
Yeah, those were really good.
Insane. Great writing, great acting, great. Everything is great.
I'll have to check it out.
Let me think of some other horror films.
Yeah.
Old stuff like House on Haunted Hill with. Yeah. Vincent Price, man, that scared the shit out of me as a little kid.
As a kid,
Yeah. We reviewed that film. There's a movie, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie that we hold in high regard here at the CineScare Horror Podcast that I think you might be a big fan of. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's called Drive-In Massacre.
What's it called?
Drive-In Massacre. If you have not seen it, I would highly recommend. It sounds like it might be right up your alley.
I've seen Pool Party Massacre. My friend did that. He did 1, 2, and 3 Pool Party Massacre.
You're shitting me. I actually just watched that 2 weeks ago.
That's Drew. One. He's my friend, man. Drew Marvin. Really? Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What a coinkidink.
Yeah, that's funny.
I liked it.
Speaking of TV shows, have you watched Widow's Bay yet?
Uh-uh.
Great.
Oh. No.
Fantastic.
Guys. Really good. Okay. Really good.
Yeah, it's brand new. It's brand new. It came out.
It came out this year.
Yeah, it came out. I think the last episode was in June. It's on Apple TV, and it is amazing. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Scary.
It's part comedy, part horror, and the horror comedy. I think could be kind of scary. But it also has a comedy side. It's really
a tribute
good.
To horror films and genres in general, slashers and haunted, you know.
It's Matthew Reese is in it, and Stephen Root is in it. It's really, really strong. Great.
So
great
my last TV show horror, it's not really horror, it's like comedy horror. You guys are going to laugh at me and think, idiot.
No.
Supernatural.
I watched Supernatural. I watched. I didn't get through the whole series, but yeah,
I watched all 15 seasons, dude.
Did you?
And there were some bad episodes, but that's just the way it goes. You know,
yeah.
You can't. But there is some great stuff in the first 4 or 5 seasons.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah. I probably watched the first 4 seasons, and I did really like it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with Supernatural is 15 seasons, and it's so daunting. It's like, all right,
20 episodes. Yeah.
It's like 20 episodes.
How do you do that?
Like, how do you do that? Right? Like, I don't know if I can do it. You know, yeah.
No,
like
you're watching all the Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't watch the Simpsons.
Dude, the first 4 or 5 seasons are stellar. It's excellent writing, acting. It's spot on. Now, every box is checked. I'm not saying you'll like it, but I personally.
Yeah, I enjoyed that show. I in the same way that I liked Buffy, you know?
Yeah.
Buffy's great. Yeah. You're a Buffy fan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Angel. Angel
too. Yeah, Angel as well. That was a really good show too.
Who is your favorite character in Buffy?
My favorite character.
Was it Xander? Was it Willow? He's Buffy. Struggling.
I gotta think about that, dude.
Yeah, it's a hard one.
Yeah. I think, but Mark
Boreanaz shouldn't have gone on and done all that other stuff. He should have.
Right.
Yeah.
That stuff with Bones is terrible, man.
Yup.
I know some people who really like Bones, though. They really got into that show, but I couldn't get into it. Yeah. But if we leave you with one thought, well, definitely check out Widow's Bay. It is, I think you'll love it. Yeah.
And if we leave you with some good thoughts,
Drive-In Massacre, I'll leave you with the third shot thought. Okay, what's it called?
Drive-In Massacre. It's on Tubi, so it's free. Yeah.
And the third thought, if you're going to watch a spy show, an MI5 spy show, watch the Day of the Jackal with Eddie Redmayne. Have you seen that? It's from the old movie, Day of the Jackal.
I've seen the movie, yeah.
There's the TV show. He just did a season. Oh. You got to watch the season. And the lady who was spy master for the CIA, she did a whole documentary on that show and how everything they did was legit from the CIA spy master perspective.
Wow. I have to check that out.
You got to watch that and watch Slow Horses with Gary Oldman.
Slow Horses I have watched. That's great. Yeah.
I'm writing it down, Sky.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank
Drive-In Massacre.
Yeah, Drive-In Massacre. Sure. Check it out. And thank you so much for coming by. It was so fantastic having you.
You guys are a breath of fresh air, man.
Yeah, we had a blast with you. And I was so excited to have you come here because the Greasy Strangler has become one of my favorite things I've seen in quite some time. And
mine too.
I just thank you so much.
You're quite the smooth.
and Ebony and Ivory too is just a gem in itself, and I really appreciate your acting, and I'm really looking forward to your new film as well.
Yes.
How can I send you the trailer so you guys can look at my trailer and
email it to me, Sky, and I'll send it to everybody.
Great, thank you, Kath.
Yeah, thank you, and we look forward to your new movie. What is the title again?
A Ben Evans film based on the story by Josh Mallerman.
Okay, excellent. A Ben Evans film. So be on the lookout for that. And please, if you have not taken the time to watch The Greasy Strangler, check it out. It might not, it's definitely, I don't even know if I'd say it's an acquired taste. It's more of if it fits for you, you're going to love it. Like if you're into absurdist film and surreal film, surreal and absurdist comedy, you will absolutely love it.
GreasyStrangler.com. GreasyStrangler.com.
Perfect. Can we buy it's one of those on hats, Amazon, by the way?
Yeah.
I want one of those hats.
No, those hats are like one of a kind. It's like
There's only four of them.
Oh, wow.
going.
That's amazing.
God, he ain't giving it up either.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you.
And we'll talk soon, brother.
Yeah, all right. Take care.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I'm emailing the trailer right now.
Awesome. Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was a fantastic treat. And what a great, great time. Shoot, I probably shouldn't have let him go. But anyway, go to www.cinescaredhorror.com. But actually, whose pick is next?
Mine.
Joe.
Yeah.
Raising my hand. Joe. We have housekeeping to do. Yeah. So my next pick, I've got the theme name is A Slim Chance of Survival. So we're going to watch three films. First one, Thinner, from 1996, which is going to be on Amazon Prime. Then we're going to watch The Machinist, which is on Pluto in 2004. And then we're going to watch a new film called Saccharin, which is on Shudder in 2026. And after you've seen them, you'll realize why we call it A Slim Chance of Survival. It's all about skinny people. Get it?
Oh, yeah.
Slim chance.
Excellent.
Ba-dum-bum. Thanks.
Where's that?
It's all about Mark.
Yeah.
Where's the joke? Oh, here we go. There you go.
Thank you. Slim chance of survival. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Slim chance of survival.
God damn it, Joe. I'm not fast enough, and I just hit the wrong button just now. Okay.
Slim chance of survival. There you go.
All right. So go to www.cinescarehorror.com and check out our merchandise, and also go to our Facebook group and join if you haven't yet. I've just posted the trailer for our new short coming out next year called The Thing With Me. So our trailer is up, and we got a bunch of stuff shot this weekend. So far looking pretty good. So we'll see. I think this thing might almost turn out to be a feature by the way. I think we're at about a 30-minute short right now. So
wow.
I know. Just a little bit more and we'll practically have a feature. So anyway, go check that out and we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I got a death curse!
It was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
What's happening?
We all go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Aesthetic penises.